Next Step 433, September 22nd, 2016. Remember when voting was sacred? You'd get a purple finger out of the whole deal. Remember when videos weren't fun? You would never go viral. And remember a place called Armenia. We're going to do all that, and we're going to connect the dots between them all. This is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, and I'm inviting you to take this next step with us right now. Today's next step is sponsored by Predator Cycling, specializing in custom carbon bicycles, components, accessories, and repair. Pushing the limits of technology, derived from experience, created from passion, fabricated by cyclists for cyclists. Predator Cycling. Visit them at predatorcycling.com.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes, welcoming you to our ninth year of broadcasting The Next Step. The next step is a step, a stride, moving us forward. Here, Father Voskin provides his unique and distinctive voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, giving an intelligent and practical answer to the challenges of life, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by Jesus Christ. It's a practical approach to melding spirit and passion in the real world. The next steps are serious, fun, informative, and most of all relevant, as religion should be. So get ready, we're taking the next step.
You ever picked one of those up? Yeah, those carbon bikes. You ever picked one up? You know, you can do it with your pinky. You just extend your pinky and imagine you're picking up a small little pen or a small tube. That's what it is. They are so light. So they're just engineered for, I guess, racing, to go fast, right? Very, very light. I was just thinking about that the other day because my mom's now not confined, but she uses a wheelchair. And so when we take her from place to place, there's always this added dimension to our travels. We have to take this big wheelchair. And the wheelchairs are made out of steel. Steel, guy. I mean, like, has somebody thought about making these carbon fiber wheelchairs? Wouldn't that be great? How you just pick it up with your pinky? Well, it turns out, yes, somebody has thought about them. Actually, they do them for the Special Olympics or the Olympics where they use the wheelchairs. And they do have them. And so we looked it up and very, very cost prohibitive, but they are available. But it got me to thinking about that. And I had a really wonderful chance to see these carbon bikes when I went down to Predator Cycling a while ago. And just fascinating, you know, that there's this engineering going on out there that, they're just beautiful. Anyway, I guess it's a nice way of just saying thank you to our sponsors, Predator Cycling. Yeah, and thank you for joining us today. I'm glad you're with us today. We have a great show for you today. We're going to be doing all the usual stuff that we do. And I thought I'd start off with a bit about Armenian independence. I think it's really important in many ways. I know a lot of our listeners have no connection maybe to Armenia, aside from the fact that it is the birthplace of Armodoxy. Armodoxy comes to us from this small little country, and so it behooves us to know what's going on over there politically. And Armenia just celebrated its 25th year of independence, 25th anniversary of Independence Day, just yesterday, September 21st. And what I thought I'd start off today's show, but as I was thinking more and more about it, especially the ramifications, and really thought about really where it leads us in the quest for Armodoxy, in the quest for finding truth, for finding a way of life, I thought we'd leave it for the second portion of today's show, right after the song, because actually there's more to it than just an independence of a state. There's more to it than a few firecrackers and a few people singing national anthems. It's really pretty powerful. So bear with me for a little bit. We'll get to it in the second portion of today's show. So let's start off with something else. I happen to be in Seattle. the last two Sundays. I'm going to be there again this Sunday. What a beautiful place and a beautiful town and a beautiful church. I have a beautiful Armenian church and community. And what's fascinating for me is I get to exercise more use of the English language in an Armenian community. This is in stark contrast to what I've been doing in Glendale, where the majority are Armenian speakers. Actually, in Seattle at the Armenian church, the majority are, as I would say, like primary language or first language, let's call it, is Russian. So when I left seminary back in the late 70s, we were in the Soviet Union at that time. Armenia was in the Soviet Union. And we would learn a lot of Russian by osmosis, just by being in that environment, you know, you'd want it or not. And I remember the dean of the seminary, he was a very strict disciplinarian. He did not want us to speak Russian. It was just all Armenian. But like it or not, you're living inside the Soviet Union and you see the signs. And so you learned a little Russian here and there. But one phrase that really got me out of trouble was «Не знаю по-русски», «I don't speak Russian». And it's I've used it pretty well. Even in Seattle, I found myself last week telling people, no, I don't speak Russian, but I do speak English. And it was accepted. It's really remarkable that how accepted English is throughout. I mean, obviously, it's an international language, but I was just pleasantly surprised that I was able to communicate not only in Armenian, but also in English up there. And it was a way of communicating with a broad group of people that otherwise I might not have a chance to have met. So it's been great going up there to the Holy Resurrection Church. And if you happen to be there this week, I look forward to seeing you. The other main item that I wanted to share with you is the video. Have you seen that? Okay, if you haven't seen it, make sure you check out today's show notes. It's the one about the coffee cups, yeah, that one. It's wild. It went viral. It went viral. Over the first weekend, we had something like, the first weekend only, we had over 40,000 views. And I think at this, as I'm recording right now, let's see, yeah, we are over 50,000. And the number of shares, over 1,000 shares, and cross shares too, you know, because people share the shared ones, and then they become shared of shared and everything. It is wild how big it has gotten, and I'm trying to figure out why. Now, you know, the AC 101, it's not something that I'm really, my head's there, you know, because I've shared that with you. I mean, that's why we do the next step, right? What is the next step? I mean, what's beyond the Sunday school lesson of, you know, this is why we go to church and we are the first Christian nation. This is what, how you make the sign of the cross and so on and so on. But we found that and the diocesan primate, Archbishop Hovnanian, had expressed his interest to do a show like this where we spoke about just the primary, the basics. And so we agreed to come up with this format of the AC 101, Armenian Church 101. The basics. What do you need to know? What is making the sign of the cross? Why do we light candles in the church? So this last week, I did a segment called Superstitions on Coffee Cups. And here's the interesting thing about it. First of all, it goes viral. It goes viral beyond just, I mean, we even had Muslims chiming in with, they liked it, they could relate to it. We had people of non-faith. There was some people that were atheists, and they said, wow, we didn't realize how much atheism and Christianity, true form of Christianity, really intersected because we were talking about responsibility as opposed to pie in the sky kind of religion. So I've been swamped with a lot of email. I've been looking through the different messages that were left up on Facebook as well, but I don't have a habit of answering Facebook posts, first of all, primarily because I really didn't want to get into it. And so I agreed to do this show, the AC 101, and leave it on the diocesan Facebook page. And if you notice on my Facebook page, I never cross-post those AC 101s because I feel like it doesn't reflect who I am right now or what I'm doing. But it's a pleasure doing them, and they are so much fun. I've got a wonderful, wonderful producer at the diocese, Aram Musoyan, who puts together those shows, and he he does his magic, you know. That scene where you see me with berets and driving cars and stuff like that, that's all his magic. And I think people are asking, where is this coffee shop you're drinking out of? No, that is just, well, let's just leave it. I don't know where that is, okay? I'm going to leave it with that. Okay, so I'm really, like, interested to find out why this went viral. We've done 21 shows, and out of the 21, the one that came, that was the highest one, was the one on Etchmiadzin. Now think about this, okay? I explained what the word Etchmiadzin meant. That had 20,000 views that first weekend. 20,000, okay? The one that came close, now all of them over the weekends, they are usually published Friday. They publish them on the Diocesan website Friday. And by the time you're at Monday, you will definitely, for the majority of them, you'll see them in the 5,000 category. Okay, they've had about 5,000 hits. The three that I'm going to take exception to, one is the Etchmiadzin one, 20,000. The one on Vartavar, Transfiguration, that came in very close. I think it was 18 or 19,000. And then there was this one, the coffee cup, Superstition. It went sky high. Okay, we were at 50,000. Now, these, again, are just the preliminary numbers of people viewing on Facebook. It's not accounting for all the people that have been sharing and looking, and especially looking at the YouTube channels. So it's a very decent number. Let's say it that way. Now, why? Why these three? The first one, Etchmiadzin, was very informational. It was basically, this is a word, Etchmiadzin, do you know what this word means? And then breaking down that word into the two words, the compound words that they are. Etch meaning descent, Miadzin meaning born. Actually, Miadzin is a compound word too, right? Zin means to zanel, to be born, begotten. Miadzin means the only begotten. So technically is three words, Etchmiadzin, the descent of the only begotten. So I explained this, and it went viral. It went viral that first weekend, you know, 20,000 hits. Whoa, people watching it, people commenting it, wanting to know. We never knew what Etchmiadzin meant. That's what basically I got the comments. The second one was interesting. It was about Transfiguration, and I talked about the heathen tradition of throwing out water, and people liked it. There was really not too many comments about the Transfiguration part as much as there were comments about the heathen. In fact, one atheist actually took the video, pasted it on his site, and says, look what these people are talking about, you know, like, come on, don't you guys get it? And it was ridiculous. It's like, you know, people have got to get a life at some point, you know. So anyway, that was the second one. Now, this one, Superstition, we talked about coffee cups. Now, coffee cups, you know, when I was growing up, we used to call it Turkish coffee. People would call it Turkish coffee. It was this dark coffee that was ground. Later on, it became more fashionable to refer to it as Middle Eastern coffee, and certainly among Armenians in Armenian circles, we referred to it as Armenian coffee, and we found out that in Greek circles, they referred to it as Greek coffee, and so basically, the Turkish name had gotten on there because of popularity, much like yogurt, right? It's taken from the Turkish name. It would have been cool if it was called Mazun, and in fact, there are stories about this, that yogurt, before it became popular in America, it was going to be called mazun because it came from the Armenian section. But the z sound, the sound of z, was too compromising. They couldn't market that. Okay, they couldn't market that z, and they went with the Turkish word yogurt, and that has stuck. And same thing with Armenian coffee, Greek coffee. I think the more popular name that you hear in non-Middle Eastern areas is Turkish coffee. And basically, it's this very finely ground coffee that you throw into boiling water. It's better than instant. Yeah, no, it sounds like instant because it's very muddy. And if you are a student, as I think most traditions of learning to drink this coffee, if you are a student, if you are somebody who needs to spend the nights studying or keeping awake, you find that this is a fantastic way of getting a fix of caffeine into your system, a mega dose of caffeine into your system. And I think this is where a lot of the addiction to this coffee begins. It's from those late nights. Anyway, people drink this coffee, and I certainly enjoy it. I cannot do more than one of these at this time. There was a time, yeah, we'd do some big-time coffee shooting, but it is pretty intense. Okay, so Armenian coffee. Now, the tradition is that afterwards, you turn it over. Now, here's what's wild about it. This is really wild, okay? The coffee grinds that are at the bottom of the cup, they form patterns. They form incredible patterns. And if you look closely, you can see different objects. In other words, much like a cartoon where, you know, you've drawn something, these figures and everything, you can guess. Like, obviously, you look at, let's take one of the most familiar cartoons, Charlie Brown, right? Charlie Brown, he's got a round head. He's got a body. Now, he doesn't look like a man. He doesn't look like a boy, but you know that that's a boy. I mean, in reality, what I'm saying. It's like you take a physical boy, okay, stand him up there and dress him up in the same way, the same clothes and everything. I don't care if he's rounded or whatever. He doesn't look like the cartoon. But you look at the cartoon because you associate it, right, with the boy. You know he's a boy. He's got two arms, two legs. He's got a mouth and eyes, and he talks as a boy, and so he must be a boy, okay? So Charlie Brown is a boy. We accept him. In the same way, you look at a coffee cup, you turn it over, and you start seeing different things in there. And you see a line that leads out. And so you could maybe associate. And this is where I think coffee cups are fantastic, because they challenge you to be imaginative. You know, that's kind of cool, right? To dream like, oh, there's a road and it goes out. And so what this is, beyond entertainment, some people have taken to be true. You know, in other words, that they are fortune tellers. In other words, they predict the future. Now, once you make that transition from entertainment to reality, then you get into some murky areas, right? Actually, you get into some very dangerous areas, too. You know, I have a fascination with magic, and I'm just very fortunate this year on my birthday, I got a dream come true. My family took me to Magic Castle in Hollywood. I had never been all those years. And, you know, magic is so fascinating, especially for me, because I understand that it is basically illusion, right? So it's a way of taking your mind off of what is obvious and making it not so obvious. And I'm very fascinated. Tricks that fool me, you know, it's just like, how did that happen? Well, you try to figure it out. And you know that there has to be a real explanation for it. And so because you know that, you start thinking about it and you're fascinated by it. I think that's beautiful. That's what we call wonder. I think that's the wonder of religion as well. Isn't that what religion is all about? Okay, we're trying to figure it all out. And you look out at the cosmos, and especially over the last 10, 20 years with these telescopes that are out there in space, and they're showing us these supernovas colliding and these giant adventures in space taking place at distances of light years, millions of light years away. I mean, it's mind-boggling. And so you're trying to figure it out. You start thinking, okay, am I the only one here? I believe that there's a creator. This had to have started somehow, right? But if I do believe that, am I the only one in this vastness of the universe? Do you remember a few months ago I was sharing with you that I'm reading this book, Alan Lightman's The Accidental Universe? I want to share with you just this one little section. It was beautiful, beautifully said. There are, of course, many symmetries in nature. Snowflakes exhibit perfect six-sided symmetry. Each fragile branch is identical to the other. Small hailstones are round. Starfish have 5 equally spread arms, each like the rest. Jellyfish divide into 4 identical sectors. The yellow iris has 3 petals and perfect 3-sided symmetry. Rotate the flower by 1/3 of the circle and it comes back to itself. Cut an apple in 2 and you will find that its 5 seeds are arranged in a pentagonal pattern. The 2 wings of a butterfly. One could go on. Such pervasive symmetries could not be accidents. At least so we say. We look at this beautiful universe and the symmetry in it, the design of it, and you say, this can't be accident. It's got to be a designer to this. Somebody who put this all into motion, and you start thinking, this is what the wonder is. And in the same sense, when you look at a coffee cup, really, it's challenging your brain, your imagination, your feelings to put together some kind of a story. Now, when you take it beyond that and you say that, now this is what my future will be like, well, then you've got some issues there, right? It's like taking a pack of cards, 52 cards, shuffling them and putting out a solitaire pattern. And if all of the, by chance, if all of the cards come out on that first run of the 7 up cards, if they all come out, spades, what do they say? Your heart is dark. You're going through some difficulties right now. Come on, folks. At some point, you need to bring the logical sector of your mind and say, wait a minute, this is just coffee grinds. These are just cards, the random shuffle, right? And when we start to think that there is something more to that, that's when we have some problems. And that's what we've been doing. We've been ascribing that same kind of understanding for nature, for the beauty of a butterfly. When you look at the wings of a butterfly and the beautiful patterns, when you look at an apple, you cut it in and you see those 5 seeds and the way they are spread out like that. We were walking on the beach a few months ago and we ran across sand dollars. Have you ever seen those sand dollars? Just beautiful. Beautiful patterns like that. And you say, you know, there is a design. I think it was Thomas Aquinas. I believe it was Thomas Aquinas who uses the metaphor of the watchmaker. You're walking down the beach and you find a watch. And you've never seen this object before. It's got hands, it turns around, it keeps time, and you turn it around and it's got all kinds of gears in it that are moving around. Well, what is your assumption? What is the only assumption you can make? Is that there must be a watchmaker. Somebody who put that all into motion. Right? Pretty easy. And same thing too. When you look at the world, you look at the universe, and you start wondering, this is the beauty of religion. You start thinking, what is this all about? How did I get here? Where am I from? Where am I going? What is the purpose? Why am I here? Am I here for just no other reason except to have fun? There's that scene in Superman. I love that scene. The movie Superman. If you ever get a chance to see it, it's the old 1978. Can you believe 1978? I'm referring to it as old. Anyway, Christopher Reeve movie. And it is the young Clark Kent. And he realizes he can take that football and he can kick it every time he can make a touchdown. Every time he can make a field goal. He knows exactly where to maneuver. He can do it. And he says to his father, I have all these talents, but you're not letting me use them. And the father, Jonathan Kent, turns to him, the adopted father, right? Yeah, the metaphors are incredible. The similarities are incredible. And the father says, I know you're here for a purpose. And I don't think that purpose is to make touchdowns. In other words, you're here for a purpose. And it's got to be something bigger than, you know, a field goal. It's not just to kick a ball over a couple posts. It's not just to maneuver your way with the ball to make a touchdown. And certainly there are people who are talented and do that, and they bring a lot of entertainment and a lot of joy to people, but this is not your function. And I think this is one of the beautiful things about religion, is being able to find what your purpose is, what your function is. Now, I put it out there, these three videos that I made that went viral. And what I'm going to do today is I'm going to put a link on today's show notes to all of the videos, okay? Take a look at them. They're 21. Each of them are 5 minutes long at the most. Some of them you've seen and everything. But I would love to hear your comments. I would love to hear what you think. You know, why did these three get to be super viral, let's say, in that way? But I think my thought is that they speak to something that we don't know. They speak to a mystery. Whether it is Etchmiadzin and the idea of understanding, uncovering a mystery that we thought we knew. We knew this word, but now we understand it. Or whether it's Vartavar, the idea of the pagans and our connection with something before time. Or the coffee cups, the mystery of... is it all written out in the stars? And certainly that's the message that I get across, that, yeah, okay, these are just coffee grinds. These are just stars that are up in the sky. These do have little things. But at the end of the day, you personally need to take responsibility of your life. And so what you say, do you understand what I'm saying? It's like, if you allow the coffee grinds to say what your destiny is, if you allow stars, astrology, to rule your life, then what happens to responsibility? It's thrown out of it's thrown out the door, right? Because at the end of the day, if you haven't been productive, if you haven't been the life that you should have led, what happens? What do you have to say? You say, well, it's not in the stars. Well, my coffee grounds didn't show it. Ridiculous as that sounds, that's basically what it is. Think about, was it Harvey Milk, right? Back in San Francisco. I'll never forget this because I happen to live up there right around this time. We got to San Jose right after the assassination up there in San Francisco. And there was the Twinkie defense. Look it up. It's a legitimate defense that the man had eaten so many Twinkies that it affected his brain. In other words, he wasn't responsible for it. Yeah, I know. You don't believe it. I'll put a link on today's show notes, okay? Definitely, Twinkie defense. But basically, do you take responsibility for your life? And if you do, how do you deal with that? Taking responsibility doesn't mean to just, you know, beat yourself up for the difficulties that you've had. It's so much easier to blame the stars and to blame coffee grinds, the roll of the dice. But instead, how about this? How about taking responsibility by saying, I'm moving forward. I have repented, I have done wrong, and I move forward. And that's what Jesus calls us to do. Not for us to let these old things fester within us, or not for us to just stay inside that old life, but to move forward. Okay? Let's take a break right now. We're going to listen to the Song of the Day. I'm going to come back and share some thoughts about independence. Love to hear from you. Check out the show notes too. Here's today's song. Enjoy.
Yes, Coca-Rodis, چون چاد سلم مرلم سارم بایت گوی سومو نوریت ممرن و نوریت منم های استان آشخار یز گوت آوید میت آوین دارن بوی را وران کن مرلم سارم Unorit sapre
Public Radio, the name of the group. A song called Hayastan Ashgar, Armenian World, and how appropriate on the 25th anniversary of Armenian independence. Yeah, I had a chance to see this group. We went out and saw them, I would want to say about 2 years ago. They were in the Glendale area, and we saw them at a concert along with Zulal. And what a night. Can't forget that one. Armenian Public Radio. There will be a link on today's show notes. Do check out all of their music. Just wonderful, wonderful stuff. And do support all of these artists that we feature here on The Next Step. I remember a joke when I was a kid I had heard, more like a riddle, that I've used many times, especially to get the point home about expectations and preconceptions. And it goes like this, like 4th of July. Do they have 4th of July in Canada or in Mexico? And immediately people think like, well, 4th of July is Independence Day. Why would Mexico, why would Canada celebrate Independence Day? Or you might even throw it out, do they have 4th of July in England? There's a good one, right? Because after all, the independence was from England, okay? And so immediately they say, no, 4th of July is only in America. And then you light up and you say, I'm sorry, they have a 4th of July in Canada and Mexico and in England, just as they have a 3rd of July, just as they have a 5th of July. And, of course, this little joke slash riddle makes sense because people have associated 4th of July with Independence Day here in America. We refer to the 4th of July when technically the proper name of it is Independence Day, not the 4th of July. The 4th of July is a date on the calendar. Why bring this up? Because Right now, Armenia just celebrated its 25th anniversary of independence, and September 21st is the date. But it's really hasn't caught on, I guess, in 25 years, as much as the words Independence Day. It's still celebrated as Independence Day. It's not celebrated as the 21st of September. I'm sure it is within Armenia, but outside of Armenia, it's not a big deal, and it will be. I mean, you know, if we have that independence for long term, like America now, 240 years in Armenia, I'm sure September 21st will be synonymous with the words Independence Day, as it is, as 4th of July is. Okay, so yesterday they celebrated this, and of course there's a lot of tension out there because they just went through quite a bit of civil unrest over the last couple years. And as I shared with you a few minutes ago, I know that quite a number of our audience is not Armenian, and the scope of this show is really about religion. And so you're saying, okay, are we going to get into a political discussion? No, I'm not. What I'm going to talk about is that idea of independence, along the same lines as what we were talking about earlier, right? Reading that coffee cup. It's not about the coffee cup or the grinds. It's about expressions and allowing your imagination to go free. Well, think of life as this ultimate imagination. Life is that expression that you have, and you throw it out, and you carve out your niche in the world. I always refer to the story that Jesus gives us about the talents. And I think that we always miss a point in that story. You know, the one I'm talking about, there's three men who are given an amount of money, or talents, as we refer to them. But for convenience sake, we use financial expressions, okay? So the first one is given $10,000. $10,000, and the second one is given $5,000, and the third one is given $1,000. So right off the bat, it points to the inequality of life, that there are certain people that have more than others, others who have less than others, and so on, okay? But here's the story. The man who has $10,000 takes what he has and he duplicates it and he returns back another $10,000. So he's done well with what he has. The guy who has five invests it or somehow doubles it and returns five more. So he returns $10,000. The first having 10 gives 20 back. The second one has five, gives five back, gives 10 back. Now, the third one is the interesting character in this story. And by the way, I will definitely put a link on today's show notes so you can read it as it was said by Jesus. Okay, don't take my word for it, but I'm embellishing it a little. And the third one has the $1,000. And he's so scared to do anything with that $1,000 that he takes the $1,000. And he wraps it up in a small handkerchief and puts it in his pocket. And so when the accounting is demanded, the others give back multiples of what they had taken in. This man, so scared, has taken his, saved it, and returns it. Now, he hasn't lost anything. He's not a bad guy. He hasn't lost anything. But he was scared to invest, scared to take a risk. And I think that's the point of this story. Because at the end of the conclusion of the story, Jesus refers to this man as the damned servant. In Armenian, a beautiful word, ambidanzara. He's the guy who has misused what God has given him. Now think about it. Misuse is not about taking what has been given and squandering it or using it in different ways, but not using it. That's the point of the story, okay? A lot of times we think of sin as something that we do. Oh, I did something so horrible, that's a sin. No, equally as sinful is not doing something when you have the ability to do it. While knowing the evil, yet I willingly gave way, and from good works I purposely kept away. This is in the Confession of the Armenian Church. And over, Jesus talks about a productive life. I mean, think about, I am the vine and my Father is the vine dresser. You are the branches. Abide in me and I in you, and you will bear fruit. I mean, it's always about a productive life, about a good life. And when he says, I came to give you life and give it abundantly, he's not talking about a welfare state. He's talking about enjoying every second of that life. Yeah, I know, people get all hung up about this. Oh, Jesus is talking about money and he's talking about abundance. And no, that abundance is beyond what's in your pocket. It's filling up your spirit, filling up your heart, filling up every inch of you. And your life includes your family. It includes the people around you, the people that you care about. And so you influence, you touch the lives of others. And where can you do this? Well, optimally, you can do this in a free environment. And so this is why within the church, it is so important that we also understand that Christ's ministry was in this world. It's not something of heaven. Remember the story of the unjust steward, right? And he talks about, Jesus talks about under no uncertain terms, that this world is a real world. And it is important that you use the talents that have been given to you to deal with people in this world. And so we are people, and we live with the rules of this world. There are rules. There are boundaries, and you need to be able to understand those boundaries. Whether you respect them or not, you have to be able to understand those limitations, whether you respect them or not. And to be able to understand means that you can see them as limitations, and then those limitations are the ones that become challenges for you. The ones that you hurdle over, that you jump over, right? And so within a free society, you have that opportunity. And that's why independence is so valuable. That's why I share with you in my office one of the most beautiful things that I have, along with the icons and the other pictures in my office, I do have the Declaration of Independence framed. I love it. I think it is a sacred document. It talks about unalienable rights, that we are endowed by our Creator. Can you imagine that? The most powerful nation on earth, usually getting the rap for being this godless state. But here it is in the early documentation for this country. The Declaration of Independence, 1776, says, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. And so when I read that, I understand that the people who received their independence understood themselves as part of a bigger system than just that country, bigger than the boundaries that are around them. And so when I look at Armenia, I think that we have, whether you're Armenian or not, whether you're interested in politics, you have an opportunity really to understand a young, fledgling nation, the difficulties it goes through, the problems it has to endure, and you have an opportunity to connect into it. I was with a gentleman just the other day. He had donated $100,000 to the Defense Ministry of Armenia. He was telling me about it. He was an elderly gentleman who had made a donation to our church, and we were talking about it, and he talked about defense. And as he was speaking, he was crying, as he was remembering those children, those young kids that laid down their lives back in April against the Azeris. And I thought to myself, you know, when it comes to military might in Armenia, and yesterday we had quite an exhibition of it in the parades that took place in Armenia, but here is the story that comes to us, is really Armenia gives us the example of what are your options. I mean, you can talk a good talk about nonviolence when you're okay, but look at the world that's filled with violence. Look at Armenia, basically surrounded by not only enemies, but bully enemies, bullies pushing you around. So what is your choice? And so when you talk about a violent response namely via military, it's important that you understand that there is that word defense. It's different from offense. Okay, Armenia is just sitting there and basically has to defend itself. I mean, what do you do? How do you respond to somebody who is constantly attacking you? Well, we talk, and this is really important. I think it's the lesson that we have to learn. We talk about nonviolent resistance. Is that possible? I think it is. I think it hasn't been tried. I personally think that from the ancients we have learned. I believe that during the last 2,000 years, Armenia has survived because of that nonviolent resistance. Otherwise, I think it would have been obliterated. Did I pronounce that right? Obliterated. It would be gone. Okay, but it's not. It's there. And so there is a power that we haven't learned to tap into because we're going back down to, you know, more primitive forms of conflict resolution. Okay, in that primitive form, it's important to emphasize the word defense, that this form we're going to be using as defense. And when you look at higher forms, let's use that expression, higher forms of defending yourself, it really begins with, well, first of all, with the human ability to compromise, to negotiate, to talk. I mean, have we forgotten that? That maybe we can sit down with people and we can talk. But the problem, of course, arises that can you trust the person across from you to talk? Okay, what if the person constantly is violent towards you? Do you have the right to defend yourself? And of course, this is beyond a theological discussion, because obviously it's a life and death situation. And so you can talk and you can philosophize all you want. Oh, I'm coming up with words today, aren't I? You can think about all different ways and answers to this. But when you, your family, your people, your neighbors are in danger, there's an instinctual part of you that kicks into gear, and that is, hey, I'm going to defend myself, my family, at all costs. And I think this is human. I think this is human. I think some of the greatest thinkers who contemplated the idea of a nonviolent resistance, when confronted with violence, had to come up with definite solutions. Now, Jesus Christ, in his answer to violence, is going up on a cross, and the willingness to die up at the cross. That's a different thing, right? Or is it? Basically, a violent reaction towards him, he overcame with a nonviolent answer. Go ahead. Take it. You're not going to take away the kingdom. You're not going to take away the big prize. You may win the battle, but you're not going to win the war. Now, we don't have that luxury of omniscience. In other words, we don't know everything. So you can't look down the line and say, it's going to work. Because think about it in this respect. We look at 25 years of independence. And you have people complaining and people talking about Armenia. But I think that as America, we have an opportunity to respond to it and say, hey, look, we have a system that started out like yours, and here we are 240 years later, and guess what? It's still not perfect. Still, there are difficulties. I mean, just think about right now. America is engaged in an election process that is yielding basically two, although there's four or five candidates, there's basically two major candidates who basically aren't worth anything. I mean, seriously, it's mind-boggling when you think about the scope of this. You have, I mean, I don't know all 300 million Americans living in the United States. I don't know them. But I certainly know enough people to say that, hey, we can make better choices than this. I mean, there are some very, very good diplomats, statesmen, people who know how to deliver products. I mean, is this really for real that we've got just two candidates out there? This is what we've got to vote for. You know what's even more disheartening? After everything we've lived through, look at this. Do you remember the last few years? I mean, do you remember the Iraqi wars? These are things that we have all seen. The Iraqi wars. Do you remember the liberation of Iraq? Do you remember the first time that the Iraqis voted? And people throughout the world were putting their fingers in ink. Purple ink, was it? Black ink? Whatever it was. And they were saying, we stand united with the Iraqis. Because the sacredness of self-determination is so great. And so connecting the dots with what we were talking about earlier, right? This is why we discount and we negate the idea that coffee cups can decide your fate. Because where is self-determination? When you have self-determination, then you could add to it the responsibility clause. Okay? I did something wrong, and it's because the stars led me this way, means that it's the stars' fault. Because God wanted me to do it, well, guess what? That's like when we're kids, right? Mommy catches us doing something wrong. I didn't do it. My brother made me do it. I didn't do it. My friend made me do it. You know? How about when we extend that? The devil made me do it. Well, guess what? Who's responsible then? The devil, right? But as you mature, as you grow, who takes on that responsibility? I did it. You have to say, I did it. Okay, I made a mistake. Now I need to move forward. I need to move forward from that mistake. And in the same way, this is what's irritating me, because we valued this self-determination a few years ago. We looked at Iraq, we looked at the Arab Spring, and we said, God bless them, look, they are creating and they are determining themselves. And guess what's happening right now in America? Basically, people are putting down that proverbial finger. They're saying, okay, we're not going to be voting this year. We're going to be casting a protest vote by not voting. How sacred was voting, self-determination, just a couple years ago? And how quickly we are to throw it out. Because in a sense, we have let fate take over. This is the fate. This is all we've been given, these two people. Well, no. You can make noise. It's not hopeless. Yes, the way things are going right now, the chances are that we're going to end up with one of these two, right? Whether it's Clinton or whether it's Trump, we're going to end up. But if you really exerted yourself, you have that opportunity to really make a change. And enough people decided that enough is enough. You can do the change. Now look what, within Armenians, I mean, it's so sad. It's really, really sad. And I talk about this because within the community day and night. I mean, people are actually talking about the acceptance of the candidates accepting an event that took place 100 years ago. There's still this concern, like, what will the candidates say? USA Armenia Life, check it out. This is like one of the big tabloid, really junky piece of, but it's very popular. Very, very popular newspaper, just like, I guess, the National Enquirer. For all intents and purposes, it's pretty junky, right? But it's very, very, very popular, right? USA Armenia Life, they had a caption on the front page with the two vice presidential candidates. Which VP candidate has a better record on Armenian genocide recognition? Can you believe it? Who cares? Who cares? I'd rather say, as an Armenian, which VP or which president has a better policy about what's going on in the world, about stopping the spread of genocide. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about ancient history, which is not going to change, whether people accept it or not. I've shared this with you many, many millions of times, right? To me, recognition is just another slap in the face. What do you mean you're going to decide to recognize it? How dare you not recognize it? How dare anybody say it didn't exist? I mean, would anybody else tolerate this? I dare you to go out there and tell the Jewish community that we're going to debate whether the Holocaust happened or not. I dare you to go up to the African-American community and say, well, we're going to debate and decide whether slavery happened or not, or whether you're here on your own free will. How dare they do that to the Armenians? But Armenians love to play this game. Please recognize. Why? It's beyond recognition. It's a fact of history. There's nothing else that needs to be said about it. What we need to do about it is move forward with it. And so in talking about Armenian independence, or the celebration of the 25th anniversary of Armenian independence, we have an opportunity, really, to look at that state and say that, you know what? There's an opportunity here for all of us to accept challenges, to understand the dynamics of what it means to be bullied, to be surrounded by enemies, and to put our feet in the shoes of others, to understand the pain and understand that there is a human responsibility, to these underdog states, especially Armenia. What was it, the statesman, I'm sorry, I forgot who said it, I'll try to look it up, before he said, to serve Armenia is to serve humanity. Wow. Pretty cool, huh? William Gladstone. It pays to have a librarian as your producer. Thank you, Susie. Okay, it's William Gladstone, British Liberal Prime Minister, 1809 to 1898. In his speech stated during the Hamidian, this is prior to the genocide, he said, to serve Armenia is to serve civilization. And if you go back a little bit more, I think it was Tolstoy who said, basically, the sole meaning of life is to serve humanity. The sole meaning of life is to serve humanity, and now you have an opportunity to serve civilization, humanity, by looking at cases like Armenia. Now people get upset, and you know, I always point them to America, not just America 240 years out, but America 20, 25 years out. Okay, 1776, right? Do the math. So what was America like in the year 1801, 25 years after independence? What was it like? Well, definitely there was slavery, right? There was segregation. You basically got your information through school, which was usually in your own home. There was no centralized type of education. And so there was inequality, rampant. The Wild West was out there, right? Basically, whoever had the biggest gun, you just shot them down and it's yours. I mean, think about it. It wasn't this panacea. It wasn't this utopian society. And I say this because a lot of times people get anxious. Remember what I said earlier? We don't have that luxury of the omniscient brain oversight of being able to know everything. And so we can look out there. What's life going to be like in 2116, in 2216? 100 years from now, 200 years from now. We don't know that. All you know is the right now. And you have an opportunity to affect that right now. How beautiful is that? Just like the three men who were given their talents. All they knew was how to deal with their present situation. I've got 10,000, I'm going to make another 10,000. I've got 5,000, I'm going to make another 5,000. I've got 1,000, I'm too scared to do anything with it. I'm going to hold on to it. The examples that Christ gives us are examples of a productive life, a meaningful life. Along the lines of what Leo Tolstoy said, if you can connect that meaning to serving humanity. And that's what we try to do. Basically through the In Issues mission. That's what we try to do as subscribers to Armedoxy, understanding that the reason why Armenian Orthodox Christians, the first Christian nation, are still around today, it's not about an inward look of how do I serve myself, but how do I serve others? How do I understand myself in the context of others? How do I take that glorious message of resurrection and apply it to myself, understanding that my crucifixions are there, but the resurrection is just standing a few feet away. It's mine for the taking. Armenia celebrates its 25th anniversary of independence. We have an opportunity to look, to be inspired, and to inspire. Take advantage of that. Don't keep your talents close to home. Go ahead and spend them on something that's important. Be back in a few minutes, okay? Here's Susie to tell you about spending here. What the next step?
Susie here again. Before continuing with today's broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. We are now in the ninth year of producing shows which are heard around the globe. Since 2008, we've provided quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy, or as Father Vazgen calls it, Armadoxy, is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. Please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Thanks for listening and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that reminder, and thank you, all of you, for your wonderful words. Your prayers, they go a long way. Yes, we do need that as much as we need the money that out here, okay? So thank you very much for remembering us, and I love the emails that we got. I know many of you were asking about Dikrana, the young lady that we interviewed last week. I did get an email from her while she was still in Kenya, so apparently she's just slowed down a little bit in her travels. She was in Kenya yesterday, and so by today she should either be in Kigali in Rwanda, or she should be on her way en route, or perhaps even there in Uganda. We wish her the best, and thank you for all of your inquiries, and we'll keep you posted, okay? We'll keep you posted. Whatever I hear from her, I'll be happy to share with you. And thank you for being part of this ministry. Big shout out to our dear friends over at Predator Cycling. They are the sponsors this month of our shows. As I said earlier, fantastic, fantastic bicycles. You got to see these to believe them, okay? Carbon, custom carbon bicycles, components, accessories, and repair. Predator Cycling, pushing the limits of technology. I love that, right? You gotta push the limits of technology. Otherwise, what else are you living for, right? So do check them out, predatorcycling.com. So that's going to wrap it up for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed putting it out there for you. On behalf of everybody who puts this together, I want to thank you for your donations. Do look for special notes and special emails from us if you're on our mailing list. And if you're not, make sure you are, because we are going through some transitions ourselves, and I'd be happy to share that with you in the coming weeks. So do get involved with us at Facebook, at the mothership, inissues.org, epostle.net. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram and all the usual spaces, okay? On behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazgen inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskulledness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off-balance. Top limits.